By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Emerging Markets Decoded. My name is Scott Phillips, Global Head of Emerging Markets at Moody's, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Ariane Ortiz-Bolin. Today's episode is a special Moody's 2023 Outlook campaign edition of our usual podcast. But before we get to the outlook, I wanted to take a brief moment to reflect on what has been a very difficult year for emerging market investors in 2022. Total returns have been decidedly negative pretty much across the board, down 18% for both local currency and corporate bond strategies, and down more than 20% for hard currency sovereign strategies. Issuance has been very low, particularly for high yield issuers, and we've seen big increases in credit spreads. And it's fair to say that emerging markets have been on the receiving end of many of the negative macro themes of a strong dollar, high global inflation, falling economic growth, and obviously increasing concerns around debt sustainability, particularly for low-rated entities. And yes, while there are some tentative signs that at least some of these trends are easing, building a more bullish case for emerging markets still feels pretty elusive. So Ariane, in our outlook for 2023, we've articulated a negative outlook for emerging market credit conditions yet again. So talk us through, what are some of the key drivers behind this view, and why are we not more positive?
Hi, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here. We have a negative outlook mainly because of the negative international backdrop that emerging markets face. And this might be a bit of an obvious point, but in this interconnected world with very strong trade and financial ties, the international macroeconomic and financial environment is very important for emerging markets. Emerging markets end up being takers of US or European policies. And so what happens in those countries ends up disproportionately affecting emerging markets. So what are these negative drivers of negative credit conditions that we want to highlight? One is the weaker external demand from both US and Europe, which are the most important markets for emerging markets, and they're slowing down. The persistent inflationary pressures that emerging markets face, with the risks of inflation becoming more entrenched, which means that central banks will be more cautious than not. And then the risk of an escalation in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. All this means that financial conditions are tight and will continue to be tight. And so then the speed and the extent of global monetary tightening will dictate the general direction of investor sentiment, of risk appetite, and overall financial conditions.
I think it's important that investors and other people listening to this podcast understand the distinction between our views on general credit conditions for emerging markets and compare that with our expectations for changes in credit quality. And Ariane, if I understand the position correctly, in general, the large, more developed sovereigns and also the larger, more developed corporates in emerging markets will probably have the flexibility to deal with these conditions, right? But it's really for the lower rated entities, this is where a lot of the pain will be felt. Is that right? Or do you actually think we're facing more of a systemic debt crisis for emerging markets?
That's right, Scott. We're not facing a systemic EM debt crisis. And it's really important that we distinguish across emerging markets and that we use the rating level as a tool to make this differentiation. Now, let me start first by stressing one thing that you mentioned that I think is very important, which is the distinction between negative credit conditions and then its credit implications. Because we're facing negative credit conditions, but headwinds do not necessarily mean that we will have credit downgrades or that there will be credit implications, if you will. So broadly speaking, all emerging markets, sovereigns, corporates, banks face these conditions, but some will be more resilient than others. And we think that EMs rated BA and above will weather this crisis much better than those EMs that are rated B or below. Those are more exposed. And why is that? Well, BA rated and above emerging markets have better debt servicing capacity. stronger balance sheets or fiscal positions in the case of sovereigns. In addition, larger and higher rated sovereigns have been quite proactive in their monetary policy response. And this has protected their economies from capital outflows in some degree, and has also limited the depth of foreign currency depreciation. Higher rated EMs also have access to relatively deep domestic capital markets and have adequate levels of foreign exchange reserves relative to their external payment obligations. And we also see that even among countries that have current account deficits, those deficits now are smaller than they were before. And if you look at companies, many EM companies took advantage of the period of low interest rates to refinance their debt, which improved their debt structure. And that's actually the case also for some sovereigns. So this means that higher borrowing costs will not have an immediate impact in their interest payment cost. So all these different considerations that I just shared with you are important supporting factors in the current environment of tight financial conditions, and we expect them to continue to provide this resilience for the higher rated emerging markets. Now, that is not the case for the B rated and below sovereigns or corporates, which are definitely more exposed to credit risks. And here I would single out the EM issuers that have sizable financing needs. So governments or companies that have large upcoming debt payments, those that rely on external funding, and those that have large portion of their debt in foreign currency are the ones that are more susceptible to credit risks in the current environment. And among these lower rated EMs, frontier markets in Africa and Asia and corporates in the Chinese property sector are the ones that are most exposed.
You talked a little bit already about monetary policy. So let's really dig into the drivers behind our outlook. And one of the things that I think has been really interesting over the last few months is really how the conversation has shifted from, you know, concerns about high inflation and monetary policy really to economic growth. And I guess this key question of, you know, will the Fed and I guess other central banks and emerging markets, will they be able to keep hiking to bring down inflation, but to do that in a way that avoids having a hard landing for economic growth? So I guess Ariane, you know, what are our views on both of these issues? And what do you think investors should be most worried about in 2023? Is it growth or is it inflation?
I like, Scott, that you put the question in those simple terms. Many investors and us have been worried about inflation. But now the sentiment is shifting, with recent data showing that inflation will likely peak this year or early next year. And so the key concern for 2023 will be growth, not inflation. And so the key question to ask is, how sharp of a slowdown should we expect? For the US, actually, our baseline is now of a mild recession in 2023. Now, this does not mean that inflation is not a concern. We think that the central banks in emerging markets will keep interest rates high, even when they see that inflation starts to come down. Core inflation, mind you, across many markets remains high. So we think that central banks will want to make sure that these inflationary expectations do not become entrenched, and they will err on caution. But let me turn back to growth, Scott, because I did mention that it will be the key concern for investors and for us in 2023. We expect emerging market growth to exceed that of developed markets in 2023. But this improved performance will be mainly driven by China. And that is because we expect China to grow 4% next year from only 3% this year, which is still quite below their official targets. But for the rest of EMs, for the vast majority of them, we are forecasting lower growth next year compared to 2022. And now, if we go through some of the key emerging markets and some regions, we expect some of the large EMs, such as Mexico, Brazil, and South Africa, to report lackluster growth in 2023. And that is because tight financial conditions will really compound some of the structural growth problems that they've always had, which are related to weak investment and lack of reforms. And turning to other regions, for example, Central and Eastern Europe, the proximity to the Russia-Ukraine conflict really remains a drag on output. And here for me, Hungary and Poland stand out as countries where growth next year will be significantly lower than in 2022. And then going to another region, Asia, growth in some Asian EMs, such as India, Philippines, Thailand, will be slower in 2023 than 2022, But these rates will still be high, will be above 4%. So yes, slower growth across regions, same as I mentioned for other regions, but still above 4%. And we think that these countries will benefit from the robust domestic consumption and investment and a delayed recovery of tourism. Now, we think that oil and gas exporters will fare better than other commodity producers. And that is because geopolitical risks and underinvestment in recent years will keep supply tight for oil and gas. Now, on the other hand, for other commodity producers, say producers of copper or iron ore, with China's slowdown, the demand will not be that strong. So here I'm thinking, for example, of Chile, which we expect will post zero growth next year.
I mean, Ariane, I think that's a perfect segue to talk about China, because, you know, sort of listening to you there and listening to your views about growth for emerging markets in 2023. Now, I think when you sort of look at the headline aggregate, you know, it's quite encouraging to see, you know, emerging market growth, the delta between EM growth and developed market growth widening up in 2023. But I think it's important that people understand that really a lot of that is driven by China, right? And so, you know, if we start to get more concerned about Chinese growth, then obviously it starts to bring down the headline number for EMs more broadly. So let's dig into that then, because I guess, you know, what we've seen this year, you know, for China is a gradual tick down in expectations for growth, not just for 2022, but also for next year as well. And looking at some of the more recent readouts, these have been really weaker than expected. And I guess we've also seen hopes, right, that you know, the authorities could ease some of the COVID-19 restrictions. But as soon as these rumors come out, you know, the authorities seem very quick to actually quash them. So it's certainly a very uncertain and mixed picture. So Ariane, just remind listeners to this podcast about why China is so important for emerging markets, not just for the whole investable universe, but also, you know, the surrounding countries around China. And talk us through, what is our view on China for next year?
Yes, China is definitely important for emerging markets, but for very different reasons than, say, the US. And I think it's important to make that very clear. While the US has a current account deficit, which means that it imports goods and services from all over the world, China has a current account surplus, which means that it demands a lot of inputs from the world. But then it's mostly for internal production and consumption. So what this really means is that the trade and the financial linkages that China has with the rest of the world are not as profound as the linkages that the US has. So a US slowdown has more ramifications or more channels of transmission, if you will, than a China slowdown. But that does not mean that a China slowdown will not be quite important for emerging markets. The main channel of transmission is what I was mentioning earlier, lower demand for commodities. And that has negative implications for non-oil commodity producers in Africa and in Latin America. Now, the linkages that I was saying are not as strong with the rest of the world are definitely strong with some Asian countries that are closer to China. And I'm here thinking of the Asian economies where the trade, the financial, the remittance linkages are still there. And, you know, going back to your question, you asked me what is our view for Chinese growth in the next year. Well, we think that Chinese growth is unlikely to return to growth levels of the last 10 years. And that risks are rising, that the more subdued growth outlook may be structural rather than cyclical. And here, you know, the demographic concerns might come to the forefront. And in the short term, thinking of the COVID policies that will still be in place with lockdown and mobility restrictions, and then the downturn in the property sector and its spillovers to the rest of the economy will negatively impact consumer confidence and investment.
Thanks very much, Ariane. I mean, I agree with you completely. I mean, I think this is really the key question, right? I mean, we're seeing this slowdown in growth, but how much of it is cyclical? How much of it is structural? You know, this is really going to be the key question, you know, for those people looking at China, you know, and next year and going forwards. Now, I just want to finish with a brief discussion about ESG. I mean, COP27. Is ongoing right now. And we've already heard some pretty passionate speeches about the need for advanced economies to go further in their support for emerging markets. And you know, on top of that, we've seen already in 2022 some pretty extreme weather, right? I mean, it was a very hot summer in the Northern Hemisphere. And more recently, we've seen catastrophic flooding in places like Pakistan and more recently in Nigeria. So what does this negative outlook that we've talked about, how is this going to affect progress on these issues?
Well, negative financial conditions just means that capital and money is scarce. And emerging markets have competing policy priorities, many different needs. And the amount of investment that they need to meet their climate mitigation and adaptation needs is substantial. And so limited funding options, lower government revenue, higher borrowing costs, all these factors mean that their ability to finance those mitigation and adaptation needs will be hindered. And at the same time, the urgency to deal with these issues is increasing, as you rightly alluded to, Scott, because we have seen higher frequency and severity of extreme weather events, as we saw in Nigeria and Pakistan earlier this year, like you mentioned. So emerging markets, particularly those in Africa, Southeast Asia, and the Caribbean, are highly exposed to physical climate risks. Our own ESG scores, our environmental, social, and governance scores, show that exposure to physical climate risks is overall more negative than, say, exposure to carbon transition for emerging markets. But carbon transition will still impact emerging markets. Now, while many EMs have made net zero carbon emission commitments, we expect progress to be slow and uneven, really reflecting the challenges of embarking on these very capital intensive renewable investments. But I want to end in a more positive note, because not everything is gloomy. So two things I will mention that are positive in ESG front. One is that while in the short term, the focus is on energy security and the ongoing energy crisis in Europe will lead to higher reliance on fossil fuels, this is also going to accelerate investment in renewables to ensure that there is energy supply in the medium term and less dependence on oil producing companies and countries. And the second thing I'll mention is that renewable energy is becoming less expensive, which will make it more attainable. We're already seeing this in India and in China, where wind and solar power are the least expensive energy sources. So those are two reasons, Scott, to be hopeful about carbon transition at the very least, even if the funding for mitigation and adaptation to address the physical impact of climate change is still much lower than the need.
So lots for us all to think about as we go into 2023. It's going to be another fascinating year for emerging markets. Ariane, thanks very much for coming onto the show today and for sharing your insights with us. Join us next time for another edition of Emerging Markets Decoded. And in the meantime, if you have any comments or feedback for us, please feel free to email at empodcast@moodys.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.